Well, howdy doody. It's McCowan, and it's it's howdy doody himself. It's John Shannon.
Oh, now is that a compliment or not?
I don't know. I didn't consider the implications when I mentioned it.
You're just
I guess it depends on if you were a howdy doody fan, right? Yeah, howdy doody is almost too old for us. You know that?
I never saw him. That's how old it is.
You're lying. You know who?
No, I know. I'm not. Listen. I grew up in a town with one television channel, and we had the Friendly Giant. Okay.
Yeah.
We had Shea Lan.
Oh yeah, remember her? Yeah.
And later on, Bob, we had Mr. Dressup. Not right away, but later on. So wow. That was it. I mean, you and I both predate Sesame Street, which is hard to imagine.
That's true.
But I never saw Howdy Doody ever.
Well, I never saw the show, but I know what he looks like. And by the way, somewhere in this mess, I have an autographed picture from the Friendly Giant.
Do you?
The Friendly Giant actually came into studio and did a show with me. I have no recollection of why that happened or how that happened.
No,
but Friendly was in studio.
Friendly. And you had to call him Friendly?
I don't remember.
What'd you call him? I want to say his name was Robert Hume.
You might be right. I'm pretty sure I called him Friendly.
Yeah. I think you had to call him Friendly.
Yeah.
But well, so that was, and by the way, for anybody under 50, don't laugh. Those shows in those days were 15 huge. Minutes long. And yeah, 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
15 minutes long. And that was your, 10 o'clock, Friendly Giant, 10:15, Shaolin.
That's sad.
I know. I spent lots of time in front of the television. So,
all right. Some hoops talk today. We've got two guys that Raptor fans will be intimately familiar with. Of course, our friend Matt Devlin, the current TV voice of the Toronto Raptors, has been for many years. And Chuck Swirsky. Now, the radio voice, I think it's radio only, of the Chicago Bulls.
But,
and of course, Swirsky for many years did the Raptors games.
Correct.
Before he abandoned Toronto.
I went home. He went back to Chicago. That's what he did. So, but
I'll give him crap. But anyway.
You always do. So.
Quitter.
But that's not the big news of the day, Bob.
No, the big news of the day is Jack Eichel's merry-go-round has finally stopped in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The Golden Knights making a deal for Mr. Eichel with the Buffalo Sabres. Why don't you detail the specifics of the trade?
Well, Alex Tuck, who's on long-term IR like Eichel is, but Alex Tuck goes to Buffalo. Peyton Krebs, one of Vegas's first-round picks. They don't seem to keep first-round picks if you look at their history. And then a first-round pick next year, a second-round pick next year for Eichel and a third round pick. So, and the key thing I think in all of this for the Sabres, in addition to getting some futures, is that they retain none of Jack Eichel's $10 million salary. So for the next 5 years, he is completely off the books, which I think will please the Pegula family.
Okay. So let's assume that Eichel now has the surgery that he wants and is available to play after the Olympics.
I think that's fair. 3 months.
That's sort of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And is nothing more nor nothing less than what he was when he was healthy in Buffalo. And Tuck comes back and
about
is
about the same time, by the way, Bob.
Yeah. And is as effective as he was in Vegas, which was pretty good.
Sure.
Not a star player by any stretch, but a very good solid player.
Pretty effective in the playoffs, Bob.
And so who wins this deal? Is it obvious that the best player, the team who gets the best player, wins the deal? Because that's the consensus generally.
If Jack Eichel comes back at 100% and next year is playing the way Jack Eichel can play, then Vegas wins the trade. But 3 years from now, with the maturation of Peyton Krebs, and whatever they get for the You know, and Kelly and George will tell you that they, you know, they gave away a first round pick because they think they're going to be good. And so it's going to be in the 20s. So they get a player in the, you know, the 21st pick of the draft. Then they thought it was worth the risk and the challenge. I think I really think the biggest thing for all of this, honestly, the biggest thing for all this is get a couple of players back, get the potential of a player, but get the money off the books. Get the money off the books. And I think that's the pressure that the Sabres and Kevin Adams was having from ownership.
I don't disagree with that assessment. In terms of Vegas, they are offensively challenged. Now, offensively challenged, they were offensively challenged against Montreal in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Last year. That, I think, was just a, they're just in a bad cycle at that moment in time. Yeah. But they have so many injuries all to forwards.
Yeah.
And this is not going to solve that problem immediately. No. But longer term, maybe.
No, but those injuries, most of the, like the injuries like Carlson and Pacioretty and Stone, they'll be back hopefully before Christmas.
No, that's what I mean.
And yeah. And here's the other thing is they're playing in the Pacific Division. And I think we all agree that the Pacific Division is the weakest of the four. And if they can tread water until all the injuries come back, and then they get Eichel after the Olympic break, all of a sudden, you know, down the stretch they come, and they might be in pretty good shape. They might be in the closest thing to me as an analysis and as a historian of the game. The closest thing to this trade for me was Eric Lindros, Quebec and Philadelphia, and everybody thought the Flyers had won the trade. But then over the next period of time with some potential players that helped teams like Peter Forsberg and a couple of the other picks, it was Quebec / Colorado that won the trade. But Philadelphia would tell you they won the trade, too. This might be one that both teams are better off.
Maybe. One of the interesting notations is we did some quick math, and this is approximate but not accurate. Jack Eichel moving from Buffalo, the state of New York, to Las Vegas, the state of Nevada.
He gets a raise.
Will save about $1 million a year in tax.
Probably more. Probably a bit more. I think it's 11 or 12% more of his $10 million salary.
Well, there you go. Well, it's $1.1 million, $1.2 million, whatever it is. It's you know.
So
good deal.
Congratulations.
For him.
Congratulations. You're gonna have your surgery. Congratulations. You now have another $1 million to spend.
Yeah. Well, I know you know what that's like, but many of us don't.
Surgery?
Basketball talk today. I'm not going down that road again, John. You heard what I said. Two guys very familiar to Toronto Raptor fans. A couple of guys. One, the former voice of the Raptors on radio and the current voice of the Raptors on television. They will compare notes. When we come back, Chuck Swirsky, Matt Devlin. When we continue after these messages. We are back. It's McCowan. It's Shannon on the program here. It's a podcast. Also airs on Sirius XM, channel 167. If you're listening to it, then you know that.
And here to dissect the trade, Matt Devlin and Chuck Swirsky.
Jack Eichel to Vegas. Hey, you know, Alex Tuck is... You know, he's a Syracuse guy, so he's Baldwinville, right outside of Syracuse. So he's headed back that way, Buffalo.
Well, I wonder how happy he is. We just mentioned that Eichel saved about $1.1, $1.2 million in taxes going from New York to Nevada. Tuck's going to get dinged. Not at the same total, but the same rate going the other direction.
Yeah. But
closer to home, I guess. Anyway, good to see you two guys. How are you?
By the way, speaking of taxes, have you noticed grocery prices here in the States, Bob? They're like off the charts. I mean, it's real. I just had to get in my soapbox about that.
I got news for you. Go try and buy a 2x4.
Hey, or fill up your car.
Yeah.
Gas prices.
Everything is just out of sight.
It is.
It's just two simple words, boys. Two simple words They're going to be the buzzwords of the last 2 months of this year. Supply chain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Supply chain. That's it.
Yeah.
Well,
so, Bob, we have been on the road. We've had 3 road games so far, 4 road games. And every time we're in a city, you know, you kind of just stop into a drugstore, department store to pick up something.
Yeah, sure.
And the shelves are either barren or semi.
Yeah.
And so like yesterday in Philadelphia, you know, like the individual behind the counter is saying, well, we have no clue when trucks are showing up. We have no idea what they're going to bring. We've been waiting for goods. And so like, it's ridiculous. So I'm not sure what's going on in Canada, but in the United States, it's a real issue.
So well, I don't know. I don't know what you went to buy, Swirsk, but I'm guessing it wasn't shampoo.
No,
how am I doing?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
See, that's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah. Well, I'm observant, if nothing else.
Yes.
So I did no homework as usual for this program. I'm with you know, a bunch of pals here, and I generically remember things, but not specifically. Swirsky, when did you leave? When did you abandon Toronto?
Ship. Abandoned ship, yeah.
Yeah, that's, okay.
So what year was there. That?
So that was 2008. We had just finished the playoffs. The Raptors played the Orlando Magic in the playoffs in early May. And we were eliminated in the first round. And I went in to talk to Tom Anselmi, I think the second week in May, and tendered my resignation.
Because you already had another job.
Well, because I had been offered the job.
Right.
I was given a 48-hour window to make a decision. And after discussing things with my family, we felt that in the best interest of my family, that it was probably the prudent thing to do.
Okay, so then, Maddie, you're in Charlotte at that point,
yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So when would you have heard of, hey, the Raptor job is open? How does that work in the NBA, circles of the NBA?
I was having lunch. I remember it vividly. I was having lunch. I want to say, Chuck, maybe that announcement came on Tuesday. Pardon me. That you were moving on to Chicago. And Wednesday, I was having lunch with Carl Scheer, who's a longtime executive in the NBA as well as ABA. And we had right. weekly lunches. Mm-hmm. He actually traded for Alex English when he was in Denver as a general manager. And I always cherished those weekly lunches with him, just to soak up all the knowledge that he had about the league. And we sat there. He said, hey, did you hear Chuck was going to Chicago? I said, no, I didn't. He said, I think there might be some interest there. And so that was Wednesday. Thursday, I received a phone call from Brian Colangelo and then also Chris Hebb. On that Friday, Sunday, I flew up to Toronto, met with Jason Capone, who I had known from Charlotte, and we talked about Toronto. And then Mark Askin picked me up on Monday, drove me around Toronto, and then I had a meeting with Tom Anselmi, Chris Hebb, as well as Brian Colangelo and Maurizio Gherardini. And then coming back from there, you know, I spoke to Jack Armstrong, who I've known for a long time. And Jack gave me Chuck's number. I called up Chuck to ask about his experience in Toronto. And obviously it was glowing and had so many great things to say about it. So we kept in touch during that time. And that really kind of began, you know, the process. I was the first one in, they said, to talk to him. They had some other candidates that they wanted to talk to as well. And I want to say it was, everything got wrapped up in July is when everything ultimately got wrapped up. And that was when they were announcing the Jermaine O'Neal trade was kind of the first day that I was on the job.
Well, clearly you guys will have different memories of the organization. Chuck from a period before and Matt with from a period after 2008. But you're not unfamiliar with the eras in which you weren't here. I got a bunch of things that just off the top of my head. It's easy to say that the best team the Raptors ever had was the one that won the championship. Here's the ultimate question, though. Who's the best player to ever play for the Toronto Raptors? And, you know, you have to take a whole bunch of things into consideration when you answer that kind of question. Chuck's nodding, but thinking at the same time. Have you made up your mind on who the best Raptor ever was?
Well, you know what? I mean, listen, these players are terrific. And I never like to compare players, Bob. And I know people love to do that, and understandably so, because that's the beauty of sport. I think you have to look at who they're playing with at the time, the era in which they're playing, and against whom they're playing against. I mean, you can make an argument for Lowry. You can make an argument for DeRozan. You can make an argument for Carter. And all three would be in the mix. Obviously, the Raptors won a title with Kyle Lowry and with Kawhi Leonard, although I'm going to put an asterisk with Kawhi because he was basically a rent-a player,
right,
and it worked, you know, and more power to it. I mean, they picked him up for the sole reason of going deep in the playoffs. They won a championship, and Masai did his job, Kawhi did his job, and the city benefits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if I had a pecking order, which I don't, but if I did, it would probably be Lowry 1, DeRozan 1A, and then Vince.
Really? You have two guys ahead of Carter.
Well, just because of longevity. And, you know, I mean, listen, Vince put basketball on the map. I saw it. I called every one of his games, every one of his games. And without Vince Carter, I'm not sure where the Raptors franchise would be. Remember, John, you were there and Bob was there, that there were already stories percolating had Vince not signed that max deal with the Raptors where this franchise was going, because we saw Vancouver dissolve in front of our very eyes. And I'm not saying that would have happened in Toronto with a larger financial foundation and a corporate base, but, you know, the way Vince came onto the scene at that stage, Bob and John, remember, Carlos Delgado was the face of the Blue Jays.
That's right.
Really good player, but the Jays were going nowhere. Matt Sundin leaves hockey. They had their moments, but he was a very low-key, no vibe, just give me a hockey stick and let me play type player. No, mm-hmm. No qualms about that. Great. I love Matt Sundin. But Vince had flair. He was in the city, lived in the city. He had it going. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a rookie. He's on ESPN every night. We're selling out the ACC at that time, the ACC, 19,800, and basketball was the in thing to do. So, and then the knee injury happened, and we know the rest of the story with the trade to the Nets.
Matty D, give us your best Raptor ever.
Yeah, no, I think it's Kyle. Because of obviously what he accomplished here and the championship run. And to echo what Chuck mentioned, Vince Carter, you cannot overlook what he did for basketball in the country. The Carter effect is real. We know that. You talk to any of the NBA players from Canada, from right here in Toronto, and they will point to that. And so that is something that is lasting. And then you're going to have that championship run, and that's going to be lasting as well. And Kyle Lowry, because of the time that he spent here, because of what he was able to accomplish here, to me, he's number one. I think it's unfortunate, and, you know, Chuck would have a better sense of this because I, you know, heard, you know, obviously everything you know, it's unfortunate that things ended the way they ended with Vince at that time. But he was a figure. And at the time I'm living in the U.S., everybody wanted to see Vince. And I can only imagine with social media, can you only look back and think what Vince would be on a nightly basis in his prime in Toronto? And so, you know, he's certainly a piece and a pivotal piece at that. But for me, Kyle Lowry is number one. And so much of why you say number one, it's because of what you accomplished ultimately on the court. Did you come away with a victory? And did you end up winning? And did you win in the playoffs? And those are all the things that Kyle was able to do through time and a lot of growth, as we know, with Kyle, with the team and the pieces that were coming and going, and then ultimately bringing in Kawhi Leonard for that year. People forget prior to the stoppage of play, the pandemic, and then also the bubble that, you know, the Raptors had the second best record in the NBA. They had 50, you know, that season they had 53 wins. They were playing really good basketball. Unfortunately, bubble, lose a game seven to Boston. Who knows what would have happened with that team, even without Kawhi. And Kyle Lowry's a central figure in that.
I think, look, I saw a clip with LeBron James, and somebody asked him, give me in order the three greatest NBA players of all time. I don't know whether you guys have seen this clip. And LeBron says, wow, that's hard. Well, Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan. This is really hard. Michael Jordan. and that was the end of the clip. And essentially, I know it wasn't intentional, but he basically said Michael Jordan's the three best players ever to play in the NBA. And that's the dilemma that you face with that kind of a question. And I must say, I will say this. I have often wondered, and Chuck, you can identify with this probably a little bit more even than Matt, because you were here for it. Had Vince Carter left under different terms, had Vince Carter left under the same terms that Kyle Lowry left, would he be viewed more positively, especially by Toronto Raptor fans? I think Vince Carter was the greatest player to play here. Not the most impactful, but the era in which he played and the players that surrounded him were not of the same caliber as they were when Kyle was here.
I agree.
And remember this, and you'll know this better than I. How many times did Vince Carter lead the voting in All-Star balloting? And that doesn't necessarily mean the fans think he's the best player in the NBA, but it tells you he's in the discussion. And I would say to you guys that Kyle Lowry has, you know, with due respect, was never in that conversation. Yeah. Thoughts on that,
John? Yeah, well, Bob, listen, that's the beauty of a debate, you know?
Sure.
Matt has an opinion. I've got an opinion. You and John have an opinion. And that's why sport is sport, and the essence of how we view optically a player or a team or an era. And, we were just in Boston, and we had a conversation about the 86 Celtics, arguably one of the greatest teams in the history of the sport.
Is that Dave Cowens? Dave Cowens?
No, this is post-Dave Cowens. This is with Bird and McHale and Parrish and Dennis Johnson. And so, you know, and I'm sitting next to a guy every night, Bill Wennington, a proud Canadian of Montreal, and he was a rotation player, part-time starter, but he was on the 72-10 Bulls team. And right. You could argue that team is probably the greatest team in the history of the sport. Because remember, Golden State did win 73, but they didn't win the title.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's great thing about sport, you know. But I do agree with you about Vince, because it really, as we all know that we're there, it spiraled out of control in that period of time when you know, the front office was going through changes. The coaching staffs were changing left and right. And there was no fluidity whatsoever as far as the just the scene of putting everything together. It became very tattered. And that's when Vince wanted out. Then he started to change his mind. But by that time, it was too late. And you know the rest.
I tell you what, Matty brought up a really key point about, hey, could you imagine all the attention Vince got if there were social media when Vince played? But I'll tell you what, could you imagine all the other stuff that circulated around Vince and his family and Charles Oakley and Butch Carter and everybody within the Raptor if there was social media like that? Because it circulated anyway. it circulated without social media and the soap opera, you know, part of the great thing about Carter was, and I do think Carter was the best player. I also think he was the most influential because of the legacy that he created, but he's tainted in many ways. He's tainted because of everything around him, everything that occurred around him. And that's me as an observation of somebody outside the organization and somebody inside the organization. Yeah, and John, I think that's a factor.
John and Bob, don't you think, and Matt, we've come full circle. There's a generation removed, maybe two, from Vince as a Raptor. And, I mean, the way, you know, time heals a lot of wounds. They really do. And, you know, the way the city and the organization has now embraced Vince, especially when, you know, the twilight of Vince's career, when he was playing with different teams, and he was coming through Toronto, and you saw the love that Vince received from the fan base. I think if you ask fans now about Vince, they have like a lot of great things to say about him, and understandably and rightfully so. Now, if you ask that question early 2000s after he left for the Nets, and we all remember that Friday game when he returned in a Nets uniform, which was...
It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty.
No, it was not. But we're talking 2021 now. Mm-hmm. And he is going into the Hall of Fame. And if you ask most people, what team do you connect Vince Carter with? It's not the Nets. And it's not a host of teams that he played for, whether it's Dallas, Memphis, Phoenix, Sacramento, whomever. It's with the Toronto Raptors.
I agree with Chuck. I think one day he'll have his number in the rafters. And I think that is deserved for what he did for this organization in that time frame. And I know I wasn't there at the time. We talked about it earlier, and Chuck was here. Bob, you and John were here, you know, the when he left and everything swirling around. All that aside, he opened up that border, right? It didn't matter. He was must-see TV. He was must-see TV. His highlights were all over the TV in the
100%. US,
right? Yep. Now, what's interesting, because he is that sort of talent and that sort of player, to me, you now see Kyle Lowry and all this praise that he is receiving in Miami. It's just interesting because he hasn't changed. Right. Kyle's still doing what he's doing. Miami's off to a great start, but it's south of the border and it's the Miami Heat. And all of a sudden, wow, Kyle, which tells you maybe some of those people weren't paying attention to what he was doing on a nightly basis with the Toronto Raptors. However, on a nightly basis, without question, SportsCenter top 10, you were seeing Vince Carter, right? A play. Mm-hmm.
And every night,
Chuck, yep, on that call, that's his impact. That's who he is as a player. Kyle is just a completely separate sort of player, different sort of player and different sort of impact. And then getting back, talk about the top three players of all time. And you talk to young kids today and they'll mention LeBron James and they'll look up the numbers and they'll say, well, Michael Jordan really didn't shoot the three all that well. And you say, well, different era, different time, different importance, right? And then, as Chuck knows, you have a conversation with Wayne Embry, and he goes, whoa, wait, you haven't mentioned the big O, Oscar Robertson, right? So that is a great thing about the conversation about who is the best. And we often just rely on the most recent history to determine who that is, you know, whether it is the Big O, whether it is Michael Jordan, and whether it is LeBron James. And then, of course, you know,
Larry Bird, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
Bill Russell. Yeah.
So, Bob, I've got a story that I've never shared with you. This is about you. So back in the day when Vince, this is 2001, and the Raptors are making a push, a deep push. I pulled in Burlington, where I used to live. I pulled in, and there was, and as far as I know, still a Canadian Tire. It's right off Appleby Line.
Okay.
They've got your show on, your radio program, on like some aisle. And I hear your voice, and you're talking about Vince Carter, who's a better player, Vince Carter or Kobe Bryant. And now I'm just like, you know, hopping around, going from aisle, you know, looking for motor oil, whatever the case may be. And I hear your voice, and you're talking about Vince Carter, Kobe Bryant. And that's the magnitude of where Vince was at in that window of his time with the Toronto Raptors, that he was in the same breath, or that Kobe was in the same breath with Vince.
Interesting.
And I will never forget that, because then I thought, wow, you know.
Well, that's how good he was. And that's how he was the biggest star, I think, at, you know, in within that cycle of time that Toronto basketball has had. And again, due respect to all the others, all great players, all worthy of consideration. But I think we tend to forget how good Vince Carter was, and how big a star he was, and how recognizable he was. And, you know, to this, you know, as long as there is a slam dunk contest, and even afterwards, there will never be a clip played on television that does not include Vince Carter doing it's over.
Correct.
You know, then it will never happen. Forever and ever.
How about this, Matt and John and Bob? If somebody told you when the injury started coming, okay, and all of a sudden it was the knee, and then we had, you know, something go wrong. If someone told you back then he'd play 22 seasons.
Remarkable.
In the NBA.
Just remarkable.
I would have said there's no chance, Chuck. I would have said there's no chance.
And you know what? To his credit, he got his body together. You know, whether it's nutrition, body, workout, whatever. 22, he's played the most ever in the NBA as far as seasons. 22.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And changed his game, right? I mean, changed his game. But there's always... Yeah, it's amazing when you watch him and watch him when he played later in his career. There'd be like one move he'd make, right? That you go, yeah, there's that flash, right? Even when he altered, you know, his style of play because he had to. But through all of that, again, there you have that segment of time that's so important, as all of you spoke to, growing the game of basketball. And then after Vince, the down years, really, and 23 wins. And, you know, here we go again. And all these playoff, quote unquote, failures. And in 2016, an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. And LeBron saying at that time, you know, as a crowd was chanting the Raptors, right, and applauding them. And then the move to get Kawhi ultimately, and then winning it all. And Kyle is a part of all of that. And so
there's no argument.
All of those are important as we continue to, you know, talk about the growth of the game and the franchise as a whole. Right. And that's why, going back to what we said, it's always extremely difficult, but when you win, it always changes everything. It's one of the reasons why Michael is considered. Right. Sure. He is considered at the very top because of those rings that he has. Oscar has.
Let me ask you this. Ask both of you this, Matt, you first. In your tenure here, so 2008 on,
yeah,
were there times, I mean, you did play-by-play of some pretty bad teams at one point,
yeah,
some pretty bad teams. What did you have doubt of the franchise here? Did you ever doubt that this was that you know, what's the future? I mean, when are they going to turn it around? How many more, you know, in that period of time before Tim Leiwicki showed up and Masai showed up, was there doubt for you? And no. Chuck, I'm going to ask you the same question after.
I would say no. And the reason why is I'm not sure that people realize how difficult it is to win. It is tough. Last night, we're in Washington. They have not been back to a conference title game since the year they won the title as the Washington Bullets. That's over four decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to win. And so you see all of the different moves that are made in order to try to get back there. And I always say in the NBA, you can live in the 30s, right? You can get to 30 wins, 32 wins, 35 wins, 38 wins, and you can be there forever. And, you know, you have to make a certain move along the way to kind of catapult yourself out of that. And just because you find yourself in the lottery, and there are plenty of examples of that, right? Every year, year after year, does not mean that success is on the horizon. It is extremely difficult to win in this league. And sitting there courtside, having the conversations, having the relationships that you have this depth of knowledge behind the scenes as to why certain moves are made. And you kind of sit back and understand why at that moment, given where the franchise is, or given where that executive is in the time frame in which he's there and the pressures that they're feeling, they decide mm-hmm. to make those moves.
What about you, guys? Chuck? What about you, Chuck? Just quick.
Well, again, we're looking at a different era of Raptor basketball because, and I'll tell you what, I think I owe a lot of respect for Glenn Grumwald. Because he was very calm. If someone were to describe Glenn Grunwald, the GM, I'd say he is extremely intelligent, very patient, and there's a sense of calmness. And we were dealing with a lot. Players would be upset because the meat tasted differently in Canada than the United States. They would complain about customs. I mean, come on, you know, put your big boy pants on. You know, I could not believe some of the stuff. And Glenn would just say, okay, you know what? We got this. We're going to work with this. There were times, Bob and John, we would fly from Toronto to Buffalo and land on the tarmac. Customs would come on, take the papers, the whole bit, and then we'd take off from Buffalo to the destination of an NBA city. And, you know, you'd hear the murmurs and the complaints on the plane. But again, you know what? You work through those things. So I never felt once that the franchise was in peril because of the ownership led by Larry Tannenbaum, who to this day is like the absolute best, like the best. But I never felt that this was a franchise that was starting to have its exit meetings and yeah. and move. Vancouver, yes. Toronto, no. And I'll tell you what Glenn did. When he put together that team with Vince, with guys like Charles Oakley, Kevin Willis, D. Brown, Doug Christie, these were veteran players. And if you ask Vince of his rookie year, 98-99, and you look at the composition of that club, there was a reason that Glenn traded a guy like Marcus Camby, who had a huge upside, for a guy like Oakley, who brought a lot to the franchise. You know, I mean, Oak is Oak, and I love Oak. I knew Oak when he was with the Bulls, and to this day, he remains a friend. But I think that Glenn deserves a lot of credit for the formative years of the Toronto Raptors.
Hear, hear. Look, at this is the longest single segment we've ever had on this program. We got to take a break, and we're going to come back and chat a little bit more about the present, although not for that long. Time is our enemy. Back after these messages. It's McCowan and Shannon. Chuck Swirsky, Matt Devlin are here. I literally got like 5-6 minutes here to do this. Let me do it this way. So the Toronto Raptors are, as we sit down and do this, are 6-3. The Chicago Bulls are 6-2, Chuck?
Yes.
The Bulls are an emerging franchise. I think we would all agree. Not shocking that they're off to a good start. The Toronto Raptors were supposed to be to wallow around 500, maybe, and have certainly outperformed that. Let me do it this way. Chuck, tell me what you've seen in the Raptors. And Matt, tell me what you see in the Bulls. Chuck, to you first.
Okay, well, I see a lot of really good players with the Raptors. I think Masai on the fly is reinventing the wheel with this team. We just saw Toronto, and I love the makeup of that club. I really do. Fred VanVleet from Rockford, about an hour plus away from downtown Chicago. I've followed his career from Auburn High School. Great, great player. Oh, my gosh. But I mean, it's other than that. I mean, Scotty Barnes getting, you know, we have a player that was drafted a year before him, same slot, fourth overall, and in Patrick Williams. And I have followed Florida State's program. We have a Florida State coach on our roster. And I'll tell you what, I love Florida State kids in the NBA. Leonard Hamilton does a magnificent job. So it really doesn't surprise me what's going on with Scotty Barnes. I just like the Raptors. I like where they're at. I like where they're going. I like their cap room situation as they move forward. And I think this is a team that people should not be sleeping on. I think they've got a great upside.
Mr. Devlin on the Chicago Bulls.
Well, I think they had the most impactful offseason of any NBA team. If you look at what they were able to do, bringing in DeMar DeRozan, we all know, and I know time here is short, but we all know DeMar DeRozan, he's a pro's pro, and he's a magnificent player, magnificent person. And then you bring in Lonzo Ball and you think about the impact, and now all of a sudden you have Vucevic, and they're poised to, you know, get back into the postseason and I would imagine make a run. And Mark Eversley, who's from here in Toronto, sure, the general manager, had a great time speaking with him when he was here in Toronto just a week or so ago. And, you know, and Billy Donovan's an excellent coach. So this is a franchise that, you know, is definitely committed to winning. And, you know, I really like their offseason moves. And I think that they're going to be a team to contend with in the East. In the East, I think Chuck probably would agree with this. The depth in the East is there night in and night out. And it's going to be
hasn't been that way for a long time, though, Matt.
Yeah, but it's even more so.
I don't disagree.
You know, look, at the next Raptor opponent is Cleveland. They're 5-4, right? Yeah. You know, it's not like, you know, there's a lot of easy nights, you know, in the East. But I think Chicago's poised, you know, and here they are once again.
All right, last one for both of you. Who do you expect to win the NBA championship this year? Chuck.
And you can't pick your own team.
Chuck rolling his eyes a little bit. It's not.
Again, you know what?
It's open.
Yeah, I mean.
It sure is.
Listen, we're doing this in early November. A lot of things can change.
Well, of course.
By the time mid-April. I mean, you know, injuries, trades. If I had to, if you put me right now on the spot, which you are, I'm going to say Milwaukee.
In spite of their
start. They're not off to a great start, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but they're hurt. I mean, you know, Holiday's out, Lopez is out. But if they get everyone back together, they've got a very aggressive front office. Their GM, you know, is proactive. You know, I just think Milwaukee is loaded.
Well, Matty D?
You know, there's so much that could happen. You know, you think back to last season when Milwaukee made the deal to bring in PJ Tucker. Do they, to Chuck's point, do they go out and make another deal like that? Miami, don't sleep on Miami, right? They decided in the offseason to you know, bring in Kyle. You know, what does Philadelphia do with Ben Simmons? I just think it's so early to go out there. It's wide open. I really do believe it's wide open, maybe more so than any. I think last year, would you have said Phoenix was going to be there?
From no. Right? Well, except they won all eight games in that play-in thing and still didn't make it. And I that woke me up to how good they might be.
So I you know, to Chuck's point on this, I mean, here we are in early November, and who decides to go out and do a deal that may be able to elevate them a little bit? So I still think there's a lot of time left, and it's an intriguing season because of that, because it is wide open, in my opinion, as good as Milwaukee is, even though they're injured and Chris Middleton is dealing with health and safety protocols and everything now.
So you're waving a white flag. You didn't pick.
Yeah,
anybody.
You did.
That's right. Get that white flag out there, Bob.
That's right. Right. No,
you want to throw your two cents in, Shannon, hockey puck.
You know what? I tell you what, I'm sold on Miami right now. I really am. Yeah. I think that, you know, the discussion we had earlier about Lowry tells you one thing. I just don't want to. I think Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra, I think they know how to win, and I think they know how to put winners together. And with what they did by getting Lowry and the changes they made, I think that they really are a team to reckon with when it comes to April, May, and June.
Well, just for the record, last night I was watching highlights, and they were showing clips of Golden State. And there's a guy who hasn't played.
Clay.
Or I guess a couple of years at Golden State, who's now taking shots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's ready, look out.
Yeah.
Because that team you had better pay attention to.
Especially defensively, Bob.
Yeah.
They are really good defensively.
And I think there are people going to sleep on them, but we'll see. Boys, it was an extreme pleasure. We'd love to be able to do this again because we barely scratched the surface on the topics that we could discuss, the four of us. So we're gonna dig and prod and see if we can get you back at some point down the road. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds like a deal.
And I'll bring my dog Jerry along for the ride as well.
Jerry.
Hey Bob, for appearing on your program, do we get like a plate of poutine or what?
No, you get another damn thing, Chuck. You get eternal gratitude.
There's no gift certificates. John, there's a gift certificate.
Chuck, what I've got for you is I've got a Nike sweatshirt with the Illinois flag on it.
There you go. No Miller shoes. Come on.
Miller shoes. Atta boy.
We're working on it, Swirsky. We're working on it.
I tell you what, Chuck, you got onions, man. You got onions.
Onions, baby. Thank you, boys. Great to see you.
Got it.
We'll talk again soon. Back after these messages. And we're back. And our thanks to Chuck Swirsky, Matt Delvin for joining us on the program. You're chuckling.
Well, it's one of those days where when you have two guys that get paid to talk on the show, we say less.
Well, so I used to call them the hi, how are you guests.
Yeah.
Because that's the only question you really have to ask.
Yeah.
You know, they walk in there and say, hi, how are you?
And really, when you think about it, this franchise has been so fortunate. And this goes back to a philosophy of how you build a franchise, is to have stability at least somewhere. And the Raptors had stability in talking to their fans with the years that they had Chuck and the years that they've had Matt. And it's people underestimate the role of that conduit between the club and the fan, particularly in hard times. And both of them have did a really good job in their time here and are doing a really good job in their time here as that conduit to the fans.
Well, it is interesting because you've got ostensibly the same 20,000 people in the arena every night. I know that's not.
But the basketball market has grown exponentially, Bob. You know that.
Sure. But in professional sports today, if your building is sold out, it's principally through season tickets, the great majority of them. Mm-hmm. And those people are there on a regular basis. So for an overwhelming percentage of your audience, your fan base, their connection to the team is only through the play-by-play voice.
Right, right.
Whether it's on radio or television. That is the connection, and it's a direct connection. You don't hear much from the coach. You don't hear much from the players. You hear very little from the general managers. You hear it all from the broadcasters.
And I'll tell you what, if you're building a franchise, if you're maintaining a franchise, it becomes an important part of what your franchise is. If you have people that have credibility in the marketplace on the air, it really does make a difference. It really does make a difference.
Well, as somebody who chose broadcasters to be on high profile programs like Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah.
And who, of course, ignored me for 40 years.
Yeah.
He shows no remorse, you understand, people.
None.
I say that. None whatsoever.
None.
What was the number one ingredient? What was the one thing you looked for?
Comfort.
In a play-by-play guy.
Comfort. If I could sit and listen to them and feel, yeah, he's having a good time, and I feel good about him doing his job. Even as a listener, I think, quite frankly, this is actually, we could probably do a whole show on it, I truly believe that I was a really good fan of any sport. And so if I was comfortable in listening to somebody, then that really put them in good stead to work on the show.
Interesting. Again, our thanks to Chuck Swirsky and Matt Devlin for being with us on the program today. We'll come back with something else tomorrow. Listening enjoyment.
That's really appointment viewing.
Well, if I knew, I'd tell them. Yeah, but apparently it's too. A big secret.
Me too.
We'll all find out together. Have yourselves a swell day, evening, and we'll see you later. Goodbye, everybody.